Welcome to F1Weekly.com, podcast number 5. Today's date is January 12th, 2006. My name's Clark Rogers, and I'm your host. I'm joined by Steve Faub, my co-host, and we're produced by David Tapia. Today's show, we're going to talk about a few things. Montoya. Mario Elian is blaming Montoya for them losing the championship. I mean, for me, this goes right over the top, Steve.
That's a little bit harsh to basically, let me see. Raikkonen retires from the lead 3 times due to mechanical failure, and it's Montoya's fault.
I guess.
Because if Raikkonen finishes those 3 races, he's done.
Yeah.
You know, they've got the constructors for sure, Raikkonen's probably champion.
Exactly. We'll bring that up again. Also, McLaren's, I think, having a problem with their V8. Both McLarens that were testing today.
Went kaplooey?
No. Another motor went kaplooey. It was that they were both running their detuned V10s.
So they haven't gotten one into a car yet.
Well, they have gotten them into a car, and they've tested them, but for some reason they've pulled it out. I think they're redesigning it. I think they found a problem. Renault did well today. R26.
Yeah, Fernando likes it.
Fernando, even Fisichella, they said it drives similar to the R25, which is good. The R25 was good. The R26 is going to be better. I see Renault leading the pack again. Also, I wanted to bring up Bernie Eccleston. Good old Bernie is doing a book deal. We'll bring that up. It's just too... This stuff is so good that I don't want to say anything anymore until later.
Good thing we don't have to write this stuff because
I'm telling
we could never come up with stuff this good.
Also, Rubens Barrichello, first drive in his Honda today. So I thought that was pretty exciting. But he was in the V10, of course, detuned, and did rather well. But I anticipated that he would do rather well.
He is a good driver.
He's a decent driver.
And he's, you know, basically spent, what, the last 4 years in Michael's shadow, and you really, nobody's ever really gotten it. Well, he has several podiums in that period of time, and
wins.
He's won a couple races, too.
Yeah, he's won a few races, like 10.
Yeah, so.
I can't even remember. I don't have any topics. Also, Spa is definitely signing for 3 years, and this is great stuff. They're going to completely refurbish the paddock, and Spa is a pretty old track. They could use some refurbishing. Also, they're going to also refurbish the bus stop chicane. The bus stop chicane, for anybody who's been to Spa, for spectators was just an awful mess. You basically got to sit in the dirt and watch through the fence as the cars went through the chicane. When you're in Spa, you don't complain too much because you're at Spa and you think you're at, you know, at the pinnacle of venues. But then I remember being there in 98.
For some people that we deal with, the vintages there being Spa.
Well, I was there in 98, and I had a guy next to me. He was actually with a spoon digging into the dirt and making himself a little seat.
Probably took him a while, too, if he was using a spoon.
It was pretty funny stuff.
We'll get back to Bernie.
Bernie's good stuff. Also, the aunt, Anthony Davidson, once again, Friday driver for Honda, another year. He's been with them for almost 5 years. It's going to be his 5th year. Somebody's got to tell this guy to get
Honda. He's trying to round out his retirement account.
No. I think it's a big mistake.
I think he should have taken... It sounded like he had an opportunity to possibly go for one of the Aguri seats and didn't.
Yeah, I don't know. It's sort of... interesting. But I think he's making a big mistake. I think he should move on and get a better job. Also, Red Bull had a problem today. One of their Ferrari V8s blew up. And it was in David Coulthard's car.
I wonder if that bodes ill for Ferrari V8s.
Oh, I don't know. You know, I haven't heard of any Ferraris blowing up, but it's not the heat that's been cold in Spain.
Yeah, but I also don't think Ferraris been running, well, what they were saying is Ferrari's running the 2005 with a detuned 10.
No, they're running the 2004
with the 8. Yeah, so they've got a 2-year-old car with the 8. So they're like, "Yes, we will have our 2006 car for Bahrain because, you know, we're not going to go out on the track in a 2004 car because they say the V8 won't fit in their 2005 car."
Well, you know, and that's
car.
Why I was so surprised that Renault was out there testing with their R26 with the V8. The new package is ready. They're putting it through its paces. I mean, it's very impressive because everybody said they were running behind. Everybody was in awe of Toyota because they seemed to be
way on top of it.
Way on top of it.
Yeah. I think Renault got more work done last year.
Yeah, that's
on
true.
This year's car.
I think they
than
did
most
too.
People thought. Mm-hmm. Because they were kind of
people thought they were ignoring the R26 because they were focused on the championship. And I hate to say that, but those were exaggerations.
Yeah, I seriously don't think that they were that. I mean, the entire championship, yeah. They were just kind of coasting because they built up such a huge lead.
And looking at the photographs of the rear end of the car, the side pods, the car looks absolutely glorious.
Yeah, they've got some very interesting stuff that I haven't seen yet on anybody else's car.
I think those guys with the computational fluid dynamics engineering degrees are doing a fantastic job.
Yeah, they're the only guys I've seen so far with a rear wing that actually has a bend in it.
Yeah. And actually, we do have a picture of the car on the website at f1weekly.com. And we'll be putting more pictures of close-ups of the rear end because I find it very, very fascinating. And it's really a work of art, especially when you compare it to the Sauber BMW.
Yeah, look like it was put together in somebody's garage.
I'm serious. I thought I was looking at a Jordan in white paint. That thing looked terrible.
Yeah.
You can see rivets sticking out. You're not even sure what it is. It's just, I hate to say it, but
they can't even afford paint.
Well, the white doesn't bother me, but just looking at this the car itself, I have this rule. If it's not pleasing to the eye, it's not aerodynamically efficient.
Yeah, and we were looking at it, too, and that the front wing that we were seeing in Juarez doesn't look legal.
It's not legal. And it's just, it looks really strange. Yeah. Like they put it together in my garage.
Yeah, exactly. Where are these guys that BMW's got putting out these really slick cars out here? They're obviously not using them to build their F1 vehicles.
Okay. Okay, what was the first topic I mentioned?
I think Montoya was
that's it.
The top of the
list.
This
is my favorite. I couldn't believe it when I read this. Mario Elian is one of the founders of the company which builds the Mercedes F1 engines for McLaren. He says that it was never down to engine problems. Losing the Constructors' Championship was down to Montoya, who, in my opinion, should have brought home more points with winning, with contributing to the championship. And Montoya made some mistakes which a driver with his experience shouldn't make. Kimi Raikkonen scored 112 points, while Montoya scored 60. Montoya came in fourth in the championship. We know Michael Schumacher came in third with 63 points, then 112 for Kimi, and 133 for Fernando. I think Elian is just frustrated, because really,
it was mechanical failure that
it
caused
was mechanical,
them,
like, and not only that, but it was I think it was the aggressive attitude of Renault going out, winning the races at the beginning. You get that comfortable margin of error of 24 points, 25 points. Once they had that bumper of points, Renault could manipulate the each race.
Right, they wouldn't.
They had control.
Yep, they didn't.
And
have
that's where McLaren
push nearly
lost
as
it.
Hard as
McLaren, they were thinking like lumberjacks. Let's just go down and chop a lot of trees, and we'll win. But that's not how you do it. There's strategy involved here.
Yeah, they were going more like, let's go as fucking fast as we can.
I don't know.
Pardon
I think,
my French.
I think,
and do the heck with all the rest of it.
Yeah, I think Mario Elian is time to retire. It's time to move on. When you say stuff like that, I mean, I don't think Ron Dennis would ever do something like that. That's just unprofessionalism.
Well, that's just not a smart thing to say.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's a way to motivate Montoya, but, you know,
I disagree.
I think, if anything, it's more likely to just piss him off.
I'm sure of it.
And just, you know, it's like, and this guy, is he even a principal in the company any longer? No, he's a founder. That doesn't necessarily mean he's actually has any...
You know, I'm not sure what his position is anymore, but I'm moving along. I want to talk about Rubens Barrichello. I thought he did a really, really good job, even though he did go fast.
He better get ahead of the test.
Well, he had the detuned V10. He was right up there matching Pedro de la Rosa's detuned V10, the McLaren. And Marc Genet came in third in the times for Thursday, the 12th of January. And he was driving a Ferrari, but I could not get any details on which Ferrari. Now, Schumacher was running a 2004 fitted with a V8 yesterday.
That was probably the one he was running because later in the article they mentioned that...
Marc Genet took over.
Well, no, they mentioned that Fernando was the fastest V8.
Well, Fernando was the fastest V8. Not only that, but he was the fastest V8. They had no problems except for, you know, I don't know.
So they, well, I think I read some now, minor, you know, unexpected mechanical glitches.
I suspect Renault's also telling the drivers to not talk about it too much. But
well, they are.
The press is there very heavily, and no problems came out. So I see good things for Renault.
Well, not only that, but... they're really the only team that didn't end up with a car stuck on the track.
And to be honest with you, this reminds me of last year. Even though there were no engine changes last year, Renault, it was sort of a quiet outcoming. They test, not too many problems, and it's smooth, and the drivers are happy. And last year, we know what happened.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Speaking of Ferraris, Massa was quoted earlier in the week that he would the Ferrari should be competitive. More competitive this year under the new rule changes, because he he cited primarily the tire change rules in the.
Well, that's because I think they're right. I think the Ferrari will be more competitive
because their tires will be worth a crap at the end of the race.
Well, no, I mean Ferrari always was rough on tires, and in 2004, those, you know, having tire changes during pit stops is a fantastic advantage. Especially because I think the Bridgestones were for short stunts were a little bit better than the Michelins.
Yeah.
But the Michelins were excellent for the whole race.
Yeah. Well, Michelin is
most of the time
better. Well, they were talking about the fact that they're constructed differently. I think Michelin has an advantage in the fact that they build long, you know, their business is built long-lasting tires.
I understand.
And
but
that
still,
was able for them to
they've been racing for a while. They do all the American IRL. No, IRL races and Champ Car races, even though the IRL, I think, are running on Firestones, but Firestone is owned by Bridgestone.
Yeah.
So...
And then also Massa says he's not number two.
Yeah,
That he was not signed as a second driver. He was signed to do his best and put forth the best effort for the team.
The only race car driver that was teamed with Michael Schumacher that honestly... said he was number two. I think it was Mika Salo. That was the only time. And but you know, even Irvine never said he would be number two, but he was number two. They're always number two. Schumacher.
Is that good?
I mean, come on. When you have five championships, you're always number one.
Yeah.
Period.
Exactly.
I mean, he knows that too. He's just not going to say it because he's got, he's got an ego just like everybody else. Okay, we're going to take that commercial break. They're ready up in the studio. We'll be back. In 60 seconds.
And now in the Action 8 studios, Tomas Juan Amigo.
Welcome back to our continuing coverage of the More in Life grand jury hearing on comedy content. More in Life creator Lon Lopez is once again on the stand to testify on behalf of the show.
Mr. Lopez, for the benefit of
F1Weekly.com,
why would anyone watch More in Life?
Okay. No, it's mainly we take a mixture of sketch comedy, remote bits, and random improv to give our show a definite unique flavor.
For all you in the Bay Area, you can now watch the weekly TV show More on Life, Wednesdays at 11 p.m. in San Jose and Campbell. Watch for the start of Season 3, coming soon, only on Comcast Channel 15. You can also check them out at moreonlife.com. to get your daily fill of sketch comedy, video podcasts, comedy news, and media reviews. That's moronlife.com.
Hmm.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. Okay, that was a good break. Now we're going to go to Desiree, our correspondent on the coast. She's going to give us a few updates in her style. Let me check the phone. Let's see if we've got her. Desiree?
Hello, Clark.
Hey, hello. Yep, we've got her.
Hi, boys.
Hello, Desiree.
Hello, F1Weekly.com listeners.
So, what do you got for us, Desiree? You got something good stuff?
Well, it's all good stuff right now because the season behind the scenes is just starting up. All the guys are getting out on the tracks in their own ways, and I'm very excited.
I'm excited.
And I was just watching the stats, as you know, who's getting on the track. And I thought that was a very great point that you were pointing out, that some are in V10s and some are in V8s.
Yeah, exactly.
That's really misleading.
Well, I thought it was funny that the fastest cars on the track were all the detuned V10s.
Yeah, that doesn't count though, huh?
Well, I don't know. Maybe they're just warming up. I don't know. Renault apparently said that their detuned V10s was very similar to the V8s. I think Fisichella said that now that he's driven the V8, that apparently they had done a good job in simulating the V8 by detuning the V10. So I don't know if everybody's doing a job as good of as Renault, but it could be working.
She's kind of loving the new V8s, huh? He's one of the first ones kind of like getting on the bandwagon a bit.
Fisichella, yeah.
Yeah, he needs to be on the bandwagon.
Well, that's true, because I think he plans to be number one on the team now that Fernando is leaving.
Exactly.
So, yeah, exactly. He was kissy-kissy.
I love the V8. Sure.
Yeah.
I was reading an article that Paul Stoddart, who was the Minardi team boss, who left Formula One, but he's still not gone. So, like Eddie Irvine, he's gone but not gone. He's been quoted as saying he branded the introduction of the V8 engines as a complete failure.
Really?
Cost-saving measure. Yep. He says that Formula One's governing body, the F1A, wanted to, you know, slash the budgets, but instead they have to switch to a whole entirely type of engine. It's actually increased cost.
Steve was talking about that
earlier. Yeah. What a failure.
Well, it basically, you make a change like that, where are you saving money?
Yeah.
Because everybody's got to kind of go back to the drawing board.
You got
to
retool.
Start over for a brand new motor. There's no cost savings there.
Yeah.
Maybe in the long run, conceivably, the V8s will be less expensive to build and maintain, but not in the technological these motors are.
So we're sort of digressing. Now we're going back to V8s, and maybe pretty soon we'll go back to V6 turbocharged.
Do they used to have those?
Yeah, 1979 Renault.
Because I'm looking at, I downloaded photos going back in time, because McLaren introduced their new livery.
Yeah, and I love that
the
livery.
Old livery.
Did you like it?
I'm not a fan of orange because it reminds me of orange.
Well,
the orange team.
You mean that was the Arrows.
Yes, Arrows. Right?
I liked
it. But
I always liked their livery, the black and orange. I always thought it looked good.
I never liked it before. I'm starting to love the orange. I downloaded about 6 or 8 pictures of the orange back in the day, a 1968 McLaren 7/68, and they're actually quite gorgeous.
Well, they are. I actually going to, you know how I occasionally go to Laguna Seca for the historical races in August.
Yeah.
And there's always some vintage car racers that own some of the Can-Am McLarens. And I love the orange. I love the orange, the black lettering. When I saw it, I thought it was totally bitchin'.
Well, I still have the flavor of Arrows in my mouth when I saw the orange, so that's why I'm trying to reprogram my mind.
That's fascinating.
Love the orange.
No, it's very cool. As a matter of fact, we have a picture of the McLaren in its new livery on the website, F1Weekly.com.
I noticed that because I not only am a correspondent for F1Weekly.com, I'm also a fan. So I went over there and saw it, but I wanted to see the old school because I really appreciate, that's one of the things I love about F1 is the tradition, that it goes back.
Yeah, that's true.
I went back to 1968. I don't know, I think Bruce McLaren might have still been alive then.
Well, as a matter of fact, you know Dennis Baer, one of our favorite photographers?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was in Spa in 1968, and he saw Bruce McLaren racing.
Wow. when he was still alive.
When he was alive.
Yeah, he's a Kiwi, the McLaren.
Indeed.
Yes, and I like anyone from the South Pacific. So I think that's cool. So I've looked at all these gorgeous pictures to get reprogrammed in mind, to get arrows out of my mind, Joss Verstappen and all that stuff, and start thinking that I'm going to love the orange because I have everything, you know,
well, you know,
black
what?
And red.
It's going to change. I don't think they're going to stick with the orange.
Yeah.
Because
no, it's kind of like a NASA deal. That's the experimental color.
Yeah, but they at least they I had to prove it to myself that they really were orange because 1968 I was only a baby, so I could not have been watching F1
maybe,
in Hawaii.
Maybe
it's
like a halfway thing for them going over to Vodafone Red next year.
It's Vodafone might change their colors to match. Who knows?
That's true. I don't. You know, you can. These things are so unpredictable.
Yeah, they are. And right now. BMW Sauber, and I have to get used to saying BMW Sauber, not BMW Williams, but BMW Sauber, they're going with all white.
I saw that.
Is that some kind of a, you know, neo-Nazi thing? I don't know, all white, yeah.
You mean Aryan?
Aryan, yeah. You know,
I don't
all
think
white
so.
And,
no, but
I think
their sponsors are pissed. Because they have no sponsorship on that car, and their photographs are showing up all over the place. And the only people getting any...
That's true. I didn't think about that,
BMW.
Steve.
Well, yeah. I mean, so with the orange, it's all orange.
Yeah, that can't last for long
because
they just signed.
Just
no,
it's not the real.
The orange still has the still has.
Petronas is still.
Yeah,
sponsor.
All the sponsorship stuff is still on.
And
there.
They just signed a sponsorship with. It's called O2.
Yes, a German company.
It's a high tech company.
Yeah, in Germany. Yeah.
Correct. I think they make phones.
Yeah, it's a good company. That's a big score for them for sponsorship.
I'm hoping they do well, but
yeah,
I think they painted the car white because right now the car is hideous.
There's no beautiful lines like the
none.
Renault.
No, I mean it's absolutely hideous. They're so far away from the beautiful scalloped look of the Renault.
The fluid. Actually, you take the Renault. It's fluid lines.
Yes, it's
they've
beautiful.
Got the fluid lines, which
and
gonna need
yeah,
compete.
I mean, I think.
It's
Sauber and
much like the McLaren is very beautiful.
Yeah, I mean the McLaren is well done as well. I concur.
Well, I don't know if that's part to do with Adrian Newey, Adrian Newey has now started work at Red Bull early. He's kind of joined them, and I followed him over there because he was McLaren guy.
I know.
The genius in McLaren, and now he's over at Red Bull, and he's in the observation mode, checking it out because the car that they have right now it wasn't one he designed. It's already designed. The RB2.
That's
so he's
right.
Checking it out. He went down to España, and he's watching it go on and taking notes so he could improve it, no doubt. I know
and
the new Red Bull is having struggles. They were overcoming a cooling problem.
That's true.
Which is, as I was thinking about, the fact that they got their chassis from the old Jaguar team. They've got to watch out for that. Cooling problem.
That's true. If there's no fog,
problems.
It's gonna exactly. It's like an old Jag that needs a little fog.
Jag. It's a Jag in Red Bull clothing, so well, we know.
I like their.
Could
their,
blow
their,
up. You know.
They're fixed. Yeah, cut holes in the bodywork.
Yeah, that's true.
But they changed their nose. They have kind of a snub nose or kind of a squared off nose
I didn't
on their car.
That.
I heard.
And at least Adrian is reunited with your old lover David.
I know. I saw a picture of the two of them talking together. DC and Adrian, and it made me feel warm and fuzzy.
I could imagine.
Yes, and I better get that waxed off if I want to get a date. I can't be warm and fuzzy.
That's
so,
true.
So yeah, so Adrian's there. He's in the scene. Red Bull's not doing so well. They said they had something of a scrappy day.
No, they blew. One of their V8s blew up today.
Scrappy. Then. I believe that's
David
British
Coulthard's.
Talk.
Yeah.
For crappy, as we say in America.
Yeah, correct.
Yes, exactly.
One of their Ferrari V8s blew up today.
Yeah, it's a Ferrari motor.
Yeah, obviously it could have something to do with the overheating.
Yeah, but they said that the only thing in the Italian in the car is the motor, and everything else is designed, by Red Bull.
In England.
In England.
Yeah.
Right, we're DC.
Yeah.
He's British.
Well, I think they're going to do well.
I think they're doing well.
I'm
really proud of Renault as well. And right behind Renault was Williams.
Really?
Cogsworth in the V8. There, Mark Webber, who I don't like, was fifth behind Ferdi.
Really?
Yeah. And they're running V8s too, so they're legit, as is Toyota.
That's
so
great.
I think it's just Toyota, Renault, and Williams running the V8s.
Now, what do you think of the livery on the Williams? Because they went with retro.
they went with retro. I haven't seen any photos of it because I'm a visual.
Yeah.
And I have not seen. We haven't been talking that much about the really dark metallic blue.
Uh
huh. Yeah.
Oh, because I think ever since they went with Cogsworth, people are just really kind of ignoring them.
But I think Cogsworth is going to do just fine.
Yeah, I think they'll actually have an advantage because they are generally a V8 manufacturer.
They know, that's right, exactly. That's exactly they have what so much they know V8.
Yeah.
So they could have the advantage there.
They have so much experience V8. In the V8 that, no, I expect Red Bull to do well.
Actually, I think Red Bull, actually,
Toro Rosso.
And everyone's giving DC high marks. Besides, he was runner-up in being voted one of the silliest facial hairs. He didn't win that.
Yeah, what was that?
Fernando Alonso.
Oh, Fernando Alonso got that.
Silliest facial hair in Formula One.
And there was another, you know,
a lip goatee.
Yeah, David Coulthard won an award.
Well, he went like runner up. He didn't win. He got runner up for his gray beard look. Fernando got his look for the soul patch.
Oh, but I was talking about the F1 magazine awards that came out in the newest Man of the Year.
He has cute butt of the year, as far as I'm concerned. I didn't know about any of Man of the Year. I think Kimmy won all that stuff. You know?
No.
I don't know about DC. I just know he's runner-up in silly.
Well, not like Juan Pablo Montoya got overtaking maneuver of the year.
He did that one maneuver that he did get a shout-out for that maneuver. That's right.
Yarno Trulli got qualifier of the year.
Who did?
Trulli.
Yarno Trulli.
Yarno, who's also was proud to carry the Olympic torch in his native country.
Adrian, that's right, in his hometown.
Yep.
That's
very cute with the flame.
You're right. Adrian Newey got technical director of the year.
We love Adrian. I love Adrian.
You love Adrian.
I love him.
I'm not
that
crazy about the guy, but I'm glad he left.
Ron?
Yeah. I mean,
yeah. He used to work for Williams before.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I thought he had worked for Benetton. Was it Williams?
He joined McLaren in 97 after splitting from Williams. So he might have been with Benetton before.
I think you're right. No, it was Williams mm-hmm. when Damon Hill was there.
Right, all the English folk.
Well, I can't find the David Coulthard winning something, but I know he won something.
Prettiest eyes in F1.
No, it was the. I don't think so.
Yeah.
Palais.
The color of the Scottish ocean. but he's doing really happy.
The pit crew of the year was the Renault team.
They were.
Yeah, I thought that was.
Yeah,
great.
No, they're good.
They look so professional. Well, I used to watch them practice. At the U.S. Grand Prix, especially as a matter of fact, last year,
mm-hmm.
where they didn't race, but man, it's the irony of it. They were so prepared.
I know.
I had binoculars and I kept watching them practice back and forth. They pushed a car into the pit, boom, change the tires.
I hope to join you this year, and Steve.
Yep. Could, yeah.
And all the other squad.
I understand.
Go out there.
Yeah, party.
It's gonna be great. I'm looking forward to it. So this is a really exciting time of year because of the transition to the V8s, the controversy if they're cost-saving or not.
Martin Brundle and Mark Blundell, they're ITV commentators.
Yes, I know.
And they're predicting a great, great, fantastic year.
For McLaren.
For F1 in
general.
For
F1, yeah. The fact that Fishy is liking it is making me feel good because he's, you know... an experienced driver, and he's giving it the thumbs up. And
that's true.
Yeah. There's a new for Williams. Going back to Williams a little bit, they have a new test driver or a Friday driver. He's a Polish fella. One of the first Poles in.
Yeah. What's his name? Miko or?
What is his name? I just had it at the tip of my tongue.
Yeah.
The first Polish driver.
The first Polish. Right. Right. He was a Formula Renault. Champion.
Yeah, well, a lot of them come out of the Formula Renault school. Even Toyota, who's promoting some young drivers now because they realize you save a lot of money in the long term when you promote some young talents,
mm-hmm.
find good drivers,
mm-hmm.
and if you sponsor them, they're sort of committed to your program as they develop.
Like this young Pole, I think they said he's been sponsored just like sponsored for like 10 years along the way.
Yeah, just like Kovalainen for Renault, who will, you know, he hopes he's taking over the Fernando seat next year.
Since he gave up his seat with BMW, it sounds like.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I read an article this week that said that Flavio talked him out of not taking a race seat at BMW and staying with Renault.
Because he turned
down that contract before Fernando actually left.
I agree, and you know what? Sometimes it's better to be a test driver for Renault than a race driver for a team that's just at the beginning of their.
Nico Rosberg is doing well.
Yeah. Oh, I expect him to do good.
Yeah, it's in his blood, eh?
It's in his blood, and he's really a smart kid.
And he's for Williams, and they're also doing great. So actually, Williams, one of the three that I can figure out that are running the gates, they're right up there. He was seventh in Juarez today. I guess today was yesterday, or yesterday is today in England, in Europe. So he was seventh. He was right after Ricardo Santa, who was really fast.
And I think
wasn't he faster?
He wasn't faster than Mark Webber.
No, he wasn't faster than Mark Webber, but he's a newbie. He was still in the top ten, or he was seventh.
And that guy is so young.
Uh-huh.
Lives in Monaco. I mean, we're talking good living.
Yeah, good living, good looking. That's what I like.
Yeah?
It doesn't hurt.
I understand.
It doesn't hurt, yes.
Very good.
I'm looking forward to it. And I'm going to have to start loving orange.
I
wouldn't expect him to go into the season with that livery.
Yeah, you don't think so?
No,
I like it so much better than that silver and black.
I love the silver and black because I look gorgeous in it.
Yeah, it's so Darth Vader-ish.
Yeah, well, when you're a brunette, you folks don't see my hair color on the F1Weekly.com website, but I'm a brunette. But I think, maybe I look good in orange, too. I'll have to get used to it, because they also ran that kind of white and orangey-red color for so many years when
I like,
was running with them.
I like orange.
Yeah.
I like orange, too. It's the Giants
colors. The M19A from 1970. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Is it
1970 car. Yeah, it's very beautiful. And they would do, like, a white spot with the number in it in the middle.
You know what you ought to do is maybe email F1Weekly.com, our producers, some of those pictures, and maybe we could post them
because they did different shades of orange.
For our viewers.
And, they're actually really gorgeous.
I like that. I think we're going to try to get some of those up for our viewers. I hate
for
to have to describe
school.
A picture.
Yeah, because I'm a fan of the old school stuff. I love things that are classic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally.
Even though I love top technology.
Absolutely.
I like, I have a little sentimental streak.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So great.
Okay, very good.
Thank you.
Don't leave. one more thing.
Yes, darling.
I wanted to ask you about the Toyota livery.
Oh, Toyota. I've not seen the Toyota. I've only been looking at the
nice people.
The nice people. No. BMW and McLaren, because they're the ones that are getting the most the notable news, because they're the shocking all white or all orange, and those are the ones I've just been looking at mostly.
What did you think about that story where maybe Willie Weber, Schumacher's manager? He leaked that story saying that Michael Schumacher might go to Toyota and they would be an all-Schumacher.
I saw right before we came on the air, I was looking at the websites, and actually Schumacher finally did hint that maybe something would be happening at the end of this year, but it was retirement.
You think so?
Yeah. Ralph says, no, he'll never leave Ferrari, but I saw about five different articles that said he hinted at perhaps retirement, or maybe a change, could maybe be a change, but most of them were angling that he was thinking about retiring.
Yeah.
It was the first time, because everyone says, no, he loves it too much. He would never retire. And then I saw four or five...
There was an article today that Schumacher said it was not 99%. There wasn't a 99% chance that he might change teams. It was a 99.9% chance that he wouldn't leave Ferrari.
Yeah, he doesn't. I mean, he really doesn't, but he hinted maybe that 1% that maybe he would retire, which was brand new, because it was maybe go to Toyota. I'm going to stay at Ferrari, and then all of a sudden this thing I saw just this evening that he was maybe retire.
Yeah, I think it's
shocking.
It's going to happen soon.
It's shocking because if Ferrari doesn't get it together, but they're getting good marks.
They're getting marks. Oh, I think they're going to have a good year.
I don't
think they're going to win the championship, because I think Renault's going to win it again.
Mm-hmm, of course. Of course you do. So a lot of people are thinking McLaren is actually going to win it.
Okay. Well, you have the right to do that, dear.
And it's not just me, other people, other experts.
I know. I know. And I, you know.
I mean, real experts.
That's true.
Are saying that McLaren.
They got to finish.
Paul Stoddart was saying that as well.
Yeah.
He's kind of a crackpot, but still.
Okay, Desiree.
Thank you, gentlemen.
We're going to a break now, so we're going to let you go.
Okay, thank you, and I look forward to speaking with you again. And thank you, listeners, F1Weekly.com. Bye-bye.
Thank you, girl.
Thank you, Desiree.
We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, we're going to have a little drinky-poo here. I'm going to have a glass of Perrier because we've been talking a lot, and talking to Desiree makes my throat very dry. Cheers, everyone. We'll be back in 60 seconds. F1Weekly.com has decided to use Google Ads on our website so we can provide Formula One related news or items that our listeners would be interested in. Please, when on the website, click on the ads and help us out. We also have added a Google search bar, so remember, you can do all your web searches right from F1Weekly.com.
I'm a fabulous, fierce, female Formula One fan, and I've discovered F1Weekly.com, a new website that keeps growing and growing, with many new features coming soon. F1Weekly.com, a Formula One fan's fresh new destination for all your Formula One needs.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Steve, I've got to bring this next topic up.
Oh, yeah, we were talking about this earlier in the week.
It's a new book.
This is just too good.
A new book about Bernie. The Daily Telegraph is reporting that Formula One commercial rights holder Bernie Eccleston has signed a deal with sports book publisher Kraken Media for the publication of an authorized account of his role in the development of F1 since 1971. It sounds pretty intriguing.
It sounds like it would be an interesting book to read.
I'm serious, yeah. To be honest with you, after that particular sentence,
we're wondering
I'm ready to go get it.
Yeah, when's it going to be published?
No, it sounds like a great book because Bernie was pretty instrumental in bringing what Formula One looks like today. The company has published similar works on Manchester United and Diego Maradona. The books will run about 1,000 pages. And will cost $3,000. I repeat, $3,000 a copy. The publisher said that they will print only 10,000 copies, which is the normal print run for a motor racing book. It will be interesting to see how it sells. Kraken says it will access to behind-the-scenes material and are hoping to move on making a documentary on the same subject. F1Weekly.com.
$3 million. We were talking about it earlier. That's not $3 million. That's $30 million if they sell all 10,000.
Well,
now we know how Bernie's going to finance the bailout of Spa.
Exactly. And F1Weekly.com, of course, has already submitted their request for a copy for review, and we'll see how soon we get that. But anyway, there you have it. Book about Bernie. Start saving now, and when it's published, you might be able to pick one up. Exactly. So there you have it.
Yeah. Couple more little Bernie bits while we're on Bernie.
Okay. What'd you get?
Spa is basically the deal with Spa is pretty much done. There was talk, I guess it was today that I read, or last night, that it looks like he's getting involved with saving the German Grand Prix.
You mean Hockenheim?
At Hockenheim.
I guess Hockenheim's got the financial problems, but they want to, you know...
There was talk about combining them, but...
Well, they got the European Grand Prix and the German Grand Prix. And now with 19 races a season, and he's looking at Greece now. We've got a
Well, he actually visited Greece.
Yeah, well, okay, but he's working on a deal. That's what Bernie does. Huh. But we've got a track being built in Mexico. He's looking at Greece.
Moscow.
Moscow wants a race. Obviously, some of these European,
Austria.
these double European races like Hockenheim and Nürburgring,
and San Marino,
the two Italian races,
Imola. Some of those races are going to go to the wayside, which I think is bad. Do we need a race in Moscow?
Well, for the growth of the sport long term, and to make it a truly
global
race.
Yeah.
See, I think one of the reasons that Bernie may be looking to get a little bit more diversified as far as countries goes, is that now he actually has some competition in the A1GP,
mm-hmm.
and the fact that that's the race of nations kind of thing. So I think he's trying to scuttle them by getting into other countries.
I do want to bring up the subject of the, I haven't heard very much about it on the websites. Nobody's talking about it, but we got an email. I think it's a week ago or so, about questioning the qualifying format. And it's funny, but nobody's discussed it at all.
I've heard bits and pieces, but they're not really talking about it that much on the websites. And actually, I have that email right here. It's from Fred Clayton in Leicester, England. I believe that's correct. But he says, "Hi, guys. The podcasts are just great, or just get better. Thanks for taking the time to do the sport such a service. Much has been said recently, like in the last 3 or 4 years, about qualifying." Well, it changes every year, right? So, of course, people are talking about it. "What do you guys feel is the best format for both fairness and the spectator?" Throw that one at you, Clark.
Well, that was from Fred from England, and I think he's right. It is going to be very, very confusing. I think people are going to be taking advantage of the confusion because, to be honest with you, I'm still not sure that I understand exactly how it's working.
Okay.
But I like the single lap format from last year. I think it's sort of a true one lap qualifying format. But I also like the way they did it 4 years ago when everybody hit the track. And everybody did the best to get their fastest lap in a certain amount of time. And even though sometimes, you'd have a slow car in front of you and mess up your lap time. But all in all, it was entertaining, especially if you were at the track.
Right. Well, I think that basically to kind of quickly go over this year's format, at least as we understand it.
Explain it to us.
Basically, everybody's going to go out at the beginning of qualifying and run the best times they can for the first 5 minutes, and the five or six cars with the slowest speeds will be pulled off the track. They'll run for another 5 minutes. The next five lowest speeds will be pulled off the track, and then so on down into the first five, till it's five on the track, and those five will be the top five.
Okay, I think
on the pole.
Okay, I think the 5 minutes is actually going to be 15 minutes.
It may be. Yeah. I think the whole thing the whole thing will last an hour.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't heard anybody talk about it, and I haven't seen anything about it.
I think for the spectators, it'll be confusing in the fact that, okay, I've got 21 cars on the track. No, I don't. I have 41 cars.
Got 22 cars on the track.
22 cars on the track. 11 teams. 22 cars on the track, and then all of a sudden, 12 of them are, six of them are going to pull off.
Yeah.
And then five are going to pull off.
But I think the fuel levels are going to be very important here, because you could have a full tank, start the race 10th, and if you're in a McLaren car, you're going to win that race with a full tank.
Exactly.
You'll eliminate a pit stop. Strategy is going to eat this up.
Yeah, they were talking about it in that you can almost give an unfair advantage to an 11th place starter. Or 11th place qualifier, because they can qualify in 11th place with a full tank of gas and only have to make one pit stop and finish the race.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I think this will be changed.
Yeah, well, this one won't last. This won't last after this year.
I agree. I completely agree.
I think they go back even further back and go to a three lap qualifying.
All right. We had another email from Alberto Robles, Irvine, California.
Yeah.
Steve, what has he got to say?
And actually, first, we'd like to thank Alberto, because we had a question last week about, we were talking Super Aguri, we thought they had an IRL team, and Alberto enlightened us.
That's right.
The name of that team is Super Aguri Fernandez Racing.
I had mentioned the IRL team that Super Aguri F1 owns. because a lot of people, you know, are sort of confused on where this guy came from.
But. Yeah, and they've got a gentleman named Kazuki Matsuda as their principal driver. If you want to check out some more about them, they're at SuperAgreeFernandezRacing.net. We also want to thank Alberto for Irvine for that answer, and also for his offer to help us with our website. And we might be using some of your ideas later there, Alberto. Actually, and then on to Alberto's email. Alberto writes, overall good show. Wish it was longer. Well, we're doing that for you tonight. But I understand. Speed up the tempo a little bit. Maybe you could talk about other series, such as Dakar or WRC. But it's a good show. Thanks for the podcast.
I like that.
Yeah, but I...
It's an F1 show, but I like WRC.
Yeah,
we go both Sebastian do. Loeb.
Yeah, we... During the WRC season, that will probably show up bits and pieces occasionally in the podcast. But like Clark says, this is primarily an F1 racing broadcast. There is talk between us that possibly, if this goes well, that we might branch out and do a second one
for
some other races.
But let me promise you this, for you WRC folk out there, that as you all know, Sebastian Loeb is going to go with a private team because Citroën has pulled out for 2006, and he's going to be going with the Citroën Kronos team, sponsored by Gauloise. So they've got great sponsorship, great support. If this privateer team with Sebastian Loeb wins, we'll definitely bring it up.
Yeah, definitely.
Because I'm a big Sebastian Loeb fan. Also, another thing that hasn't been discussed too much is Sebastian Loeb has requested and has been trying to get an F1 test. And apparently because of Flavio Briatore's bravo, he refuses to, for some reason, to test a French guy. We already know he stayed away from Sebastian Bourdain, who's been looking for an F1 ride. And Sebastian Loeb was asking for an F1 ride, and he was actually trying to get it from Ferrari. And I don't know how that turned out. Never heard about an answer.
We heard that they were talking about it, never heard whether or not he'd been denied or just couldn't match schedules or something.
Which is too bad. I'd love to see Sebastian Loeb get an F1 test.
Oh, yes.
He's a really talented
driver.
He's a really good driver. He's mature, and he's not full of himself. We need more emails from the viewers and the listeners.
And thank all of you who have sent us emails
We appreciate those emails. We're sort of surprised that we haven't gotten as many negative ones as I expected. Usually I get a lot of flack for everything I do.
Like that first one we got.
Yeah.
That one was pretty brutal.
I didn't like it. No, stinko. And thanks, Desiree. She's a good woman. We want to plug some of our sponsors. The Yard in Tallahassee. More on Life. Thieves Cross.
Yeah, definitely get Thieves
Cross. Brian does the music for us on the opening of the show. He's in Las Vegas, Nevada. I also want to thank my producer, David Tapia. Without him, we'd be nowhere. It'd be just a lot of malarkey.
It'd be a lot more grainy.
Yeah, grainy is the word. We also want to thank everybody out there sending us emails. Keep sending them. Keep up the good work.
Check out the website.
Check out the website.
F1Weekly.com.
F1Weekly.com. And I know I've been lagging on the pictures of my pilgrimage to the vintage circuit in France, but trying to get all these pictures downsized and posted on the website is taking some time. I apologize, but I'll get those up as soon as I can. Have a nice evening, everybody, and we'll see you next time on F1Weekly.com podcast. Good night, Steve.
Good night, Clark.
Good night, Dave.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers of our listening audience, for tuning in to our F1Weekly.com podcast, reporting and commenting on F1, the highest echelon of motorsport, the combination of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts all wrapped up in a high-speed package.